Hello, everybody.
Hiya.
I'm Craig.
And I'm Jack.
Special guest.
I'm Rose.
Yay.
Hey.
We're back with another tilt.
Yeah.
At live commentary.
A light tilt.
The windmill of live commentary.
I don't know what that
is. See, you've already brought up the tone. I've already
you
made
have, yeah.
a Don Quixote
referencing
for banter.
I thought that was a Chris Serrell reference.
I don't know what that means.
That medieval Spanish literature is on the table now and it's staying there for the evening.
Nobody has read Don Quixote.
I have.
Including some.
Have
I
you?
Have.
No, have you really?
No,
you
I have.
You haven't? No, you haven't. Nobody's read Don Quixote.
This is
including
like
Cervantes.
Oh, that was
who just wrote
reference.
It and went, no, I can't be bothered with that. Nobody
like,
has read it.
Have we discussed before Jack's assertion that nobody likes Prince, Devo or Popcorn? They just say they do.
No, that's fair enough.
Prince,
no,
nobody
no one
likes Devo
Prince.
And nobody likes Popcorn.
Nobody likes Prince. What kind of
no,
a fucking
no one
thing
likes
is
Prince.
Exactly.
No, you just think you do.
I don't believe that anyone's ever really a vegetarian. I think they're just showing off.
It's just faddy attitudes.
Yeah, 35 years of faddiness.
It's why you should also pronounce vegan to make them sound like fucking aliens.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Anyway, hi everybody. Welcome on board.
Yeah. Let's enjoy these men's 1950s opinions about vegetarianism and literature.
Well, let's get the film started. Now you're in your place.
Okay, let's do it.
We're watching Omen II.
Isn't it called Damien Omen II?
It is Damien.
Or sometimes even Omen.
Punctuation mark.
Omen.
Omen.
Aye,
aye.
Okay.
666.
Let's do it.
No, it's only the second one.
Oh. Why do I bother? Why do I come here?
The sex?
Well, where's that happening? That's not fair.
I speak it for being late.
You rotten bastards.
Right, we're sitting on the 20th Century Fox logo.
Okay.
Oh, we can hear ourselves coming back.
Yeah, that's fine. I'm turning down that. Don't worry about that. I'm just making sure everything's working.
Very unprofessional, isn't it? It's a feedback loop.
There you are.
Right, okay, so we're going to press play. Are you ready?
I am.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
To some extent.
Hello, George. We've already had a hello from George.
Hiya, Georgie Boy.
Hiya, George.
Hiya, Pop. Right, depends whether the batteries in this thing work.
Okay, so we're
it's all sex tonight.
Oh, it's all gone
right. It's plain. We're in.
I'll be manning the information exchange this evening.
Action image exchange.
Oh, the action image exchange.
Yeah, there we go.
Okay. So
I've never heard of Harvey Bernhard in any other film. Yeah. Mace Newfield's a name that you see now again. Can you not see?
Can you see?
There's a bit of a design flaw here.
Hang on, I'll move.
Why don't you move closer to me?
Twist the cork, not the bottle.
Okay.
There we go.
I can't see for your unwieldy.
All right, so I'll move that there then.
Right, okay.
So now it's
obstructing
my view again.
Hey, Leo McKay, hurry!
Look, it's me.
It's Chris again.
Even more like you.
It does.
Push the telly. Bring the telly towards you that way if you have some devices if you don't
there
like
we go.
It.
He looks more with it and less deranged than Chris.
You want to really move this?
Yeah, just pull it towards you. Yeah.
Did you say he looks
like
this?
Yeah.
He is like a less deranged crystal.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah. A less deranged crystal?
Yeah.
A better groomed?
Better groomed, less deranged Chris Diamond.
Less stinky.
There's some good.
It's a bit soft, that shot, isn't it?
There's some good driving acting going on here.
There is.
Some good driving acting.
He's making it seem like he's going very, very fast while he goes very, very slow.
I bet you can do good eating acting as well.
Mind that one, Dale.
The mark of a good actor.
Oh, Daniel
now,
Craig.
Do you want
can
some?
Can't stand him eating in the film.
Or, as we pointed out before,
Sean Connery
eating in Hunt for Red October.
It's horrible. It's the film.
Oh, no.
Do you remember the way Les Dawson ate in Nonna?
No.
Where he had it was a great thing where he was done up as Nonna. And you had to eat this sort of salami, and you'd go, didn't eat any of it. It was sort of Nemo'd his way through it. But that's the way Sean Connery actually eats
Dirty
in that
bastard.
Film. Anyway, we're going for a wee coffee.
Wee coffee. Interesting thing, it says they're directed by Don Taylor, but what you're seeing at the moment isn't. Because some sections of the film were directed by the great Mike Hodges.
Oh, yeah, that's
why
right,
would
yeah.
you describe him as great?
Because he made Flash Gordon, which
Flash
is on the wall behind us. And he also made Get Carter. Yeah, I think we talked about this before.
Would that be because it's an overseas edition?
I would imagine it's just because few films ever get newspapers right.
Actually, now I think of it, an overseas edition would be a lightweight paper.
Mm.
Anyway, there's the unspeakable Ian Hendry.
Yeah, horrible man. Of course, which backs up Mike Hodges having made this because he was in Get Carter.
He was indeed.
But they apparently sacked him for taking too long.
He'd been watching television.
Have you looked up on Wikipedia today?
What? No.
We just know the shit.
I didn't know it at all. Like Mike Hodges, who's that guy?
Have you seen this before?
Is he like Chas's brother? I might have seen this.
I've met Mike Hodges.
Yeah. Is he good?
I just said hello to him.
Right, okay.
It was an event for the showing of one of his new films. It was a long time ago. It was 1989.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's a film called Black Rainbow, a brilliant film.
Dirty, mucky, minky foreign newspapers are all real.
Yeah.
God knows what they're writing. Not like good British journalism.
But it's always restrained if you have newspapers and they don't appear as a swirl. As a whirling.
There is a slightly worrying modern building here in the reverse shot. In between them, there was a reverse shot which you could see a sort of looks like a sort of really dodgy nuclear power station or something that's been knocked up without telling anyone.
That's because what see when they go down to the bit where they're buried, Mordecai Vanunu's down there as well. I like the fact that I've just noticed for the first time that bar's called Ptolemy's.
Ptolemy's bar.
Ptolemy's night spot.
That boy's got a great hat on behind him. You see where Wally is. Wait, see.
Oh, there's hipsters behind him. There's proper modern hipsters.
Yeah. Man with a beard in there like that.
Lumber satchels.
Something in the back having a cafe called Lecce.
So is this a good sequel?
Yeah, it is.
It's an excellent
sequel. Yeah, are you a fan?
I'm a big fan.
Yeah.
You like all three.
Hands up who thinks this might be the best film in the three.
That doesn't translate to a mainly Sonic-based medium.
I was all four of us said that.
So I don't know because I've never seen it before. Or the third one. So.
Or know what a film is. Or have seen a film.
Know what an actor is.
You're just looking at your computer as usual.
I'm manning the information exchange.
Look, irony. I hope this guarantees my place in the Kingdom of Heaven. If only he knew.
He's in trouble there, too.
Got a good look at his arse there, didn't you, when he bent over?
Can I just tell you that apparently Omen II Damien was the official UK title, according to George White.
According to Wikipedia. Excellent.
Oh, well, there you go.
I just thought I'd let.
So they swapped it around. Well, I thought it was Damien Omen 2.
Oh, we've bumped up to 4.
We've increased by 20%.
We're back down to 3.
I'll be doing this thing where you two just count how many people are listening.
There was the crow. Is it a raven? Is it a crow or a raven?
Quoth the raven.
Quoth the
raven. I'm a raven.
Oh.
Yeah.
So...
Not
so,
relevant.
Well, that was quite
so
nice.
No, it was lovely. We've had a
would that have made that would that have made that cafe a root restaurant?
Thank you.
It's a what, bloody awful.
We've had some lovely literature so far, but we still haven't established is it a crow or a raven?
It's a raven.
It's a raven. Okay.
I was quoting poetry, and we are telling you that it is a raven.
Oh, sorry, I underestimated the beauty in your soul.
Yeah,
it's a mistake I've made frequently.
It was like that arrival. You just start thinking in a circle. That's it. It all changes.
I've never underestimated it. In the final conflict, I'm sure somebody says that Bugenhagen was like terminal or something at this point.
All right.
When they went to see him. Which adds absolutely nothing.
No.
Yeah, because he gets killed, doesn't he?
Spoilers!
No, you said you hadn't seen it.
This bit is set about a week or so after.
Yeah, it's not long after.
Gregory Peck's pegged it.
Mm. Yep. I love this bit where he just finds some mouldy old crappy statue and says, "Wow, this is fucking priceless." No, it's not.
Well, he was probably pissed.
So how well do you need to know the first film to enjoy this?
Well, they've just done quite a nice job of like bringing you up to date in that opening scene.
I don't think you need to know.
Whilst also doing a spot of foreshadowing.
Yeah.
Mm. It's very
clever.
Elegant.
Economic storytelling.
Because you do a lot of... if you had never seen it, the first one that is, you discover what happens in the first one. As the characters discover it.
Mm-hmm.
It's what we call in the trade jack storytelling. Or plot.
Plot. Yeah.
And there's plenty of
jeopardy to keep you. Yeah,
there's plenty
happy.
Of jeopardy.
Yeah, there's plenty of jeopardy in this one. I like a bit of jeopardy.
It's sort of like Transformers 2 Revenge of the Fallen in that shit goes down here. So it's got a lot for you.
I'm in. Where can I get some more of this good shit?
No.
There's rumbling there. Look.
Yep. Rumble. I have to say, there is a major difference between the operating system of the evil one in this film and the first one. In the first one, nothing massively supernatural happens. You know, like the lightning strikes and all that.
It could
all have happened. In this one, things happen.
Right.
You know, people, like that all caves in. Somebody has a heart attack. You know, it's all like, as if there's a force at work. Well, that's completely different from the first one.
That mimics the Final Destination film.
That's quite creepy. This bit is seriously disturbing.
It must have been very
horrible.
Must have been very uncomfortable to make as well.
No.
Yeah.
Quite. Sand, as we know from the Star Wars films, it's horrible.
Yep.
It gets in everywhere.
Right up your crack.
Yeah.
Now, why didn't this is better than the first one? Because I'm assuming we're not the third one is what? Considered to be the worst of the trilogy. Would that be fair?
Yeah.
So why do you prefer this to the first one?
It's not fair to say that it's the worst of the trilogy, because it's not a bad film.
No.
It's a silly film. The first one's one of the great films.
Uh-huh.
This is a different kind of film.
Uh-huh. And is it a better film, though? Because that's what Craig was attesting.
But it's a different thing when you talk about films on their own and then you think of them as part of a sequence.
Right.
You have to think of films in a different way in the context. Like Aliens is a better... You could say that Aliens... in some ways is a better film than Alien.
Uh-huh.
But in the sequence of films,
mm-hmm.
you can't compare it with Alien. Because it's an entirely different
kind
of film.
Absolutely.
You couldn't have Aliens without Alien and buy that. Anyway, he doesn't look happy, does he?
The first one's much more of a domestic sort of horror.
Uh-huh.
This one has a lot more politics and things in it. Actually, I quite like the sort of depiction of business and politics in this film.
Uh-huh. Big business.
Big business. And we'll talk about that, because you and I have talked about this quite a lot watching it. That I like the look of the big office where they have breakfast in the office, and it's all wooden panelled, and they actually have proper jobs and do their jobs properly.
Now, there is a bit of a problem with the years, the continuity. And,
aye.
Because Damien is not 7 here.
No, he's not. He's supposed to be 12.
He's 12, yeah.
And so is the actor, apparently. He's just quite a precocious-looking wee boy.
But that was set just when... I mean, was Damien 5?
No, he's about
4
by then. I mean, think about it. He's quite a grown... He's quite a big toddler by the end of the first film.
Do you think he's 5?
I'd say he's 4 or 5. And yeah, the casting in both these films is amazing in terms of finding someone that is brilliant at portraying a little creep.
Good.
They're incredible, genuinely, genuinely unsettling.
Chris doesn't like him in this.
I don't think he's brilliant. Who stinks is the cousin.
The cousin's rotten.
He's crap.
But I think he's great in it, actually.
Good haircut.
And there's excellent Anne Marion. Known to us as Juno in Beetlejuice.
Yeah.
So, Rose, you said you preferred the first Omen film?
I think so, only because I really enjoy the creeping dread in that, and the fact that for all the supernatural and biblical business, there's that sense of something very real about everyone's fears about being thought mad. When they've discovered the truth of something,
absolutely.
And also that sense of, I mean, I am a childless woman, but I think there's that idea of, you know, everyone has that sense of what if you have a child and you don't like it and you don't want it and you don't enjoy parenthood, and for all the supernatural stuff, there's something there that genuinely capitalises on people's fears about ending up in a situation where you're stuck with...
If you want to know that, just phone Chris's dad.
That's all.
There's no, I think that is good. Yeah.
It's when they got me a pet raven. That was That was a mistake. I ate it. but you have to remember, in the first film, it finishes with somebody trying to effectively murder their child. You've got to travel a pretty long journey to get to that point. And he has the doubt bit, and it only changes because David Warner...
Not only that, it's Gregory Peck.
Yeah, he has to emote.
Everyone loves him from... Everyone loves him from To Kill a Mockingbird. Yeah. It's like when the second book came out, it turned out he just hated them all along.
So is Omen 2 an exploitation movie?
Says whom?
Says George White.
No.
That guy's got magnificent... Why might he say that? That boy, look.
Oh, that is beautiful. It's like a... halo of snow.
No, George, Omen 2 is not an exploitation movie.
Don't think so.
I mean, I'd like to know why he asked.
Yeah.
Okay.
Do you feel exploited, George?
Feel free to expand on that, George.
Give us a 10 and we'll tell you if you are or not.
Yes, that's right. Now, the other thing about this film, though, which I would presume makes you like it slightly less than the first one, Rose, is the fact that there's not very much set in England in this film. It's more US-based.
It is, yeah.
Does that change how you feel about it?
Do you know, I've never thought about that. I don't think that's a factor in it. I mean, I think there is that lovely, you know, we were talking about it earlier, there's that lovely thing about it does have that general kind of grubby, beige, hauntological quality about it, the first film, and it's arguable whether or not something can be hauntological when it's deliberately designed to be creepy. But I think that's part of the charm of the first one, that it is grounded in open university and public information films and the 3-day week and that general, like, manila folder coloured 70s.
What's also particularly good about it is that he's so thrilled to be sent there instead of Rome. But it's really interesting in the first film about how the film, you see him going into the Italian embassy at the start in Rome, or the American embassy in Italy at the start, and there's some wee woman sweeping the steps, and it's all very laid back, and, you know, it's a wee bit scabby. And then you go to London, and it's Grosvenor Square, and there's Marines everywhere and all that. And it's interesting that at the time, Britain still had that level of prestige.
Yeah.
Like, you would actually give a fuck that you'd been made ambassador to Britain and not, you know, China or Germany or Russia.
Nice parties, I guess. This film does, however, although it's set in America, it has the great bonus of being set in the great city of Chicago, which looks fantastic.
But that's a real plus, because it's not set in New York.
No, and it's a proper city of commerce and trade as well. Thorn Industries, which is a sort of...
It's a proper
agricultural and other industries business, would be in Chicago. Yeah, absolutely, yeah. It's not just a stupid company that moves money about.
See, we've got a nice wee scene there, a nice wee exposition scene, which is not just an exposition scene, it's a bit of anger and old tension and all that, but you find out she's not anybody's mother.
She's a sort of mad old auntie, isn't she?
No.
You mean Lee Grant? Yeah, absolutely.
She's just the second wife and all that sort of thing.
I recommend that if you've not seen what Lee Grant's face looks like, then you should look it up.
Mm. What Lee Grant's face looks like?
She's had a lot of work done. She's like in her 80s now. And she looks extraordinary. It's like that Catwoman lady.
Oh, Jocelyn Wildenstein.
Just enormous, yeah.
Right.
William Holden, look at him. He's really angry.
Yeah, he's 23 there.
Yeah.
So, Rose, when did you first get into the Omen trilogy then? Do you remember? And for how? Was it kids in the playground?
I think it was the classic stumbling upon it on TV, and probably that experience of going, this looks boring. You know, being a 90s teenager and something comes on from the 70s and you're like, this looks boring and beige, but it has that amazing unsettling quality where you're like, I don't like the look of this yet, I can't turn it off, and then... You're absolutely hooked on it, and you realise that you're watching something that you will want to have a relationship with for the rest of your life.
When did you first?
I'm fucked off
with
you saying you were a teenager in the '90s. You bastard. I saw this on video when I was a wee kid, 12, 11, even probably younger.
Because I was watching
probably
all
the first
these,
time it was on telly. Maybe I saw it as well.
Yeah, it was telly. I saw them all.
81, 82. Yeah.
But it occurred to me, I was watching them all through. After last week's debacle on Monday.
Yeah.
Listen.
We'll come back to that.
Yeah, we'll come back to that. Don't worry.
I realised that the first one of these I saw was only 3.
Oh, really?
The telly.
No.
And did it make sense to you?
It actually explains itself perfectly well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, there are problems with Omen 3, but getting the point of it's not isn't one of those problems. And then I did probably the same as you. I probably sought out the Omen, and was amazed that it was so different from the third one.
I went out and sought out 2 and 3 on video in the strange video shop cum petrol station where we used to hire films from when we were teenagers. That I think understood its audience because it had a bigger horror section than it had a section of anything else. But it was one corner of Hillfoot Garage.
Now, here's a thing. This is 7 years on.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Why is it taking them 7 years to excavate that site?
It's a fucking lot of dust that fell in there. How long have you been?
Seven years.
You've not even hoovered this place since last
week.
Have a go at these guys.
The U-Bank over
don't
this cup of
I'm
going
go at these guys.
Dead.
Fuck's sake.
I'm not a billionaire. Fact. With a staff.
The only reason I'm sleeping with you 3 times a week is that you said to me that you were a billionaire.
Well, that's why I've got a Dyson, but I keep it good.
Who do you get the Dyson out for? I mean, we've just seen your hoddle.
It's Christmas next week.
I think
it'll come out in Christmas Eve.
Oh, what do you call that? You call that a U-Bank?
It is a U-Bank.
Is that the brand name?
Yeah, it says U-Bank on it.
All right, okay. No, I just call mine a vacuum cleaner. Not a vacuum cleaner, a carpet sweeper.
Carpet sweeper. Yeah, well, you're forbidden.
It's a hoddadoodle.
A hoddadoodle.
It's a hoddadoodle.
My family laugh at me when I get the carpet sweeper out, but I think it's great.
I can do without my U-Bank.
Well, you can skip about and get
something. Was I not just saying that before he arrived?
You were pissed.
You get something done quickly. It's like wearing a pair of slippers to go across the road. Get it done.
Oh, yeah, I do that as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, here's the thing. I think it's quite interesting. I just noticed the last thing, which is that she's lying in bed and she's reading the Bible, but it's no defence.
No, it's no defence at all.
To the member of the Craw voice choir.
Three
so that appears and goes, oh,
yeah, it's got quite good.
There's a whole load of them outside on the strings.
It's got a whole new soundtrack, this film.
Over here at the Information Exchange, I need to break in with a question from Ron Logan.
Hiya, pal.
Hi, Ron.
Who thinks that Beryl Reid is in this film.
No.
No. You think Beryl Reid's Aunt Marion?
That's her there. Playing the, that's her. She's the one in the dark glasses beside the drummer.
She's so versatile.
She was an amazing actress.
Apparently,
she
really can do anything.
It is rumoured.
Why she lasted so long.
It's rumoured that Ruby Wax is in this film.
Ruby Wax is in this film.
I thought that was the third one she was in. She's the secretary to
the American ambassador secretary.
We'll come up on that next week. By the way, do you not think they've got awfully long hair for boys at a military academy?
Well, it's not the army.
No, yeah, but then they all would have the mandatory buzz cut.
So. But I kind of always thought
it's
that
like late 70s unit.
Yeah.
You know, events recently have made America feel maybe fuller away than ever, but there is a whole side of America that I just don't get.
Well.
And this is part of it.
What year was this made, Craig?
78.
Now, in that sort of period, running up until the mid-80s, there were an awful lot of films about military academies.
Yeah.
Perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
The Lords of Discipline.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. As we've agreed before, you should just hear what his dad says and goes to the military academy in Deadport Society. We prick.
Yep. Mm.
Exactly. That was a nice wanking sign there. From Rose. So,
and they quite a dismissive wanking joke.
It was, yeah.
So yeah, I mean, but it's a weird thing, this American.
Yeah.
This American fucking military academy shit, because. It's so weird. It's so alien. And I'm still not entirely sure. You see him do a class in this. But would they just go, like, at school, but then do parades and shit?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, live under military discipline.
Yeah. I think his boarding school max. You know, it's like a particularly disciplinary and regimented way of going to boarding school.
Because I think the last mainstream proper reference must have been, and I'm sure in any case it was meant to be sort of ironic, was in Malcolm in the Middle.
Yeah.
When he's always been threatened with and then sent to.
Well, one of them is sent to, isn't he?
Is it a military academy?
And it's
in
Kenneth Mars that's the.
it's fantastic. But I always think, look at that boy in the middle.
No, he's a wee Jewish kid. Well. He's just there to be picked on.
That's J.J. Abrams.
My pal Lance Henriksen. Yeah, my very close
personal friend.
Yeah.
Can you elaborate on that?
I'm going to eat the nipple.
I think we've told you this before, have we not?
Let's talk about it.
As we all know, we all meet every year in August in the Great Brayhead to go to the Comic-Con conference, as they now call it, or Collectomania, as we insist on calling it.
Collectomania is what it's called.
Yeah. I know about 2 years ago, I was sitting there waiting for you and Rose to turn up with Chris and with my boy Ben, and Lance Henriksen walked past, and I went, "Hiya," and he went, "Either," in a really deep voice as he walked past.
Wow.
It was really, he does have an amazingly gravelly voice.
Maybe he does Peter Serafinovich's impression.
Maybe he does, but he was very friendly. He gave us a nice smile as he walked past. He went, "Either."
Did his lovely craggy face light up?
It did, yeah. And it was lovely and craggy. But that's LaSalle Street in Chicago. I have walked down there. Yeah.
Wow. Is that another street that they cross over in The Untouchables?
It's in many a film. They cross over it in The Untouchables. You're absolutely right. Further down.
No, but it's everybody also knows where it is. The question is, who wants to cross Capote?
Exactly.
That is an excellent logo.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
It's totally authentic.
I like the fact that we're still making like videos for us.
Absolutely. It's also the film, it's also the street where they have a couple of big scenes in The Dark Knight.
Hmm.
It's where the truck flips over.
Hmm.
And it's where they have the funeral.
Oh, okay.
It's a lovely street, actually. It is kind of that big main Chicago sort of image with the building. I think it's because it's got the building at the bottom of it facing you. It looks really unusual. Look at that beautiful wood.
I know, it's incredible, isn't it? And it is a nice kind of real, like, rich architectural reference to that Corridors of Power.
Absolutely.
And we know that Damien's got access to all of this. That's one of the things that I really love about these films.
The best office in any film is Carol Malden's office at the start of Meteor.
Yeah, it's a good office. Yeah.
It is.
Why is that such a good
beautiful?
Mm.
It's very modernist, isn't it?
Perfect modernist sixties office. It garbage.
That man that he was speaking to there was in All Quiet on the Western Front.
Was he?
He was, aren't he?
Not very fucking quiet now.
Well, it's quite quiet, actually. We've got the subtitles on.
Can I ask the information exchange?
It's quiet now in every front.
Has George White expanded on his question about this being an exploitation film?
He says,
he did some time ago, but the fucking action exchange here is not...
Well, you know, that's just like
not much action and not much information.
Yeah, exchange and mark, not so good.
Probably just sitting there wishing that we were watching Prometheus.
That'd be good. I'd be happy with that. George says it's a more straight horror than the first film. That's what he means by that.
All right.
There we are. Craig?
I don't know what he means by that, but that's cool.
Okay. Now, one thing... This scene suggests that all of this techie stuff and all these pools are downstairs.
Yeah, that's a bit weird. Don't believe that's happening.
just nip downstairs to the processing pools.
This is all the wine for Falconcrest.
Yeah.
What was he called?
Cesar Romero in the back there.
Was it Chase he was called? Chase Giamatti.
Oh, I don't know. My mate Alan, if he has to, is possible to listen to this, but I doubt it. I'm not sure he's the one person we're left with, George.
Yeah. I think that might be me, actually.
Is nobody listening, for fuck's sake?
We're recording.
I know. Yeah, that's the trouble with doing
it on Sunday night. So.
Yeah, well, why are we doing
on Sunday night,
Jack?
Because I got a phone call from the man or woman who runs UNICEF, and they said, could I go out and help them tomorrow? So.
Is that true, Jack?
It's kind of true. Well, I'll tell you where it is true, is I can't do it tomorrow.
That. Look at this parsley.
Is this still in the building?
Yeah.
It's Thorn Industries massive cress farm.
Yeah.
It's grown on the world's largest flannel.
The biggest purchaser of cotton wool.
Look at Sherlock Hemlock.
Who's that guy again?
Wow.
He was in something that. Oh, he was in a MASH. He was a psychiatrist.
Yep. So apparently, according to George, there is a connection here between Omen 2 and the BBC drama Triangle.
Yes, I know what that is.
Okay.
Was Kate O'Mara play Damien?
No, someone who's in this went on to be in Triangle.
Well, Triangle. Yes, that's true. Yeah.
Him.
It wasn't Damien, was it?
Jonathan Scott Taylor, Damien.
Ah, there you go.
Yep. And he was also in Tales of Unexpected.
I didn't expect that.
He played Foxley in Tales of Unexpected with John Mills and Anthony Steele.
Johnny Mills.
That's a good piece of knowledge, isn't it? Now,
do you think he just doesn't retire so he can ride about in that wee buggy?
Yeah.
Also, am I right in thinking that at the end of the
they're walking faster.
They are walking faster. At the end of the first film,
he's a fantastically fucking ugly boy, doesn't he?
Okay. At the end,
he's ugly.
At the end of the first film, there was.
Do you say that about your son's friends?
Yeah, he could come in.
Oh, they are. Yeah.
If they're ugly.
No, they're a nice bunch of boys, actually.
Jack, you're manfully trying to make an irrelevant element.
Yes, at the end of
boy.
The first film, wasn't the an implication that Damien was going to be looked after by the president?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and why did they not... Do we know why that wasn't developed?
Apparently,
in the next film?
That was in one version of it as a sequel, and it got dumped.
Well, maybe, but there actually is a workaround in it in the script.
Mm.
Because Pat Troughton...
President got eaten by a fucking dog minutes after the film ended.
No, Pat Troughton's character says when he's sure he's got everything of yours, he'll get rid of you as well. You know, they do all that, Jack. So it doesn't necessarily mean he was going to be looked after by the president. He's just... in that world.
Yeah. He's gonna lift home on the Air Force One.
And it makes no sense, actually, that he would be looked after by the prison when he's got a fucking uncle who's, you know, 19 but looks 103.
Yeah. He was in that prison camp. So his business empire began. I just bought Stalag 17 on Blu-ray to watch. That's a dad film.
Oh, yeah.
That's a film my dad made me watch. Have you seen Stalag 17?
No.
It's a great film. William Holden won the Oscar for it.
They won the Oscar for it.
The Oscar. They won the after that. That was it. Okay, a big fucking ugly bastard. Look at him, he's horrible.
He does look a bit like Booger Benson, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does, yeah.
He's fucking Jeremy Clarkson.
But this is the classic vulgar display of power when enraged.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's a great example of that. Mm.
But this is what I mean about the difference between the first film and this one being about, you know, he suddenly do the psychokinesis.
Well, I suppose he's growing into it, isn't he? Although at this stage in the story, he doesn't know.
He doesn't do it in the third one.
He doesn't know at this stage.
Yeah. He's uncontrolled rage.
The boy does look like Jeremy Clarkson, look.
You know,
he doesn't like Jeremy Clarkson.
I have to say, to keep my right on credentials up, because I'm all about that.
Corbyn's Britain.
If this was Corbyn's Britain, after all. If it was a girl, if it was Damina.
Damiana.
They would be blaming all this on Darcy fucking her.
Well, coming on the fanny rag.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
I mean, that is
Thank you, Dr. Rose.
It is a classic trope, isn't it? The teenage girl supernatural abilities, puberty.
Well, sure.
Ginger snaps.
But that's why. Yeah, but
absolutely.
That's why, film, actually.
But that's why I mentioned it, because
Firestarter, Carrie, all of those.
But in this film, because it's a boy, there's never any suggestion it's anything to do with anything psychological.
He's got this funky.
Nope.
Not enough wanking. Nope. Just starts strangling his classmates with his muffin.
He spunks back.
So there is no wank correlation at all.
No. Wow. Look at that. Breakfast in the boardroom.
There is that thing about, you know, adolescence and superpowers.
Yeah. Yes, breaking out.
Yeah.
The Homer Superior.
They are mad for starting work at stupid o'clock in America, aren't they?
Oh, the twats.
Which is ridiculous.
Lovely boardroom, though, isn't it?
And they're mad for breakfast as well.
Yeah. Mm.
Go to America, almost every second advert on telly is about breakfast, and then the ones in between are about antacid and things to get. Is there a correlation? Remember once going into those amazing, is it Duane Reddy or whatever they're called? Those amazing pharmacies that are on every single corner in New York. I remember going into one, and the sort of antacid section is about half the shop.
So you get all these scenes in American films where people are necking bottles of Pepto-Bismol, and it's fucking rank Pepto-Bismol. The first time I went to America, I was one of the mornings. I was pretty hungover, and I thought, oh well, I saw a bottle of Pepto-Bismol. I thought, oh well, they're always necking it. It'll be like night nurse. You get a wee drink of it, you get a wee dunt off it, and you'll be fine. And you taste it, and it's fucking rank.
Yeah,
it's like a blackboard spunk.
Well, there's a great bit in the remake of Cape Fear when Joe Don Baker is in it. Remember?
Oh,
and he's drinking bourbon and Pepto-Bismol. Yeah.
The worst tasting medication is Pripsin.
For threadworms.
Oh, is that the one medicine?
For bandworms.
For bandworms.
For what?
For bandworms. Worms.
Never had them.
You never got it when you were a kid.
You didn't get bum worms when you were a kid, Craig.
You posh cunt.
Yeah, you never lived. You're probably too busy sitting looking at stuff on your video recorder. Well, we were out there eating shit.
No, see, because actually,
picking each other's bums.
Well, that's because you were all middle class twats. Being a proper working class person, you got fucking bathed by your mum with a big scrubbing
proper
brush.
Working class. When
like an elephant.
Yeah. Enough. Totally. 100%. Didn't really have much of a scene.
Oh, yeah,
there.
Yeah.
It's disgusting, wasn't it? Because they tried to make it look like a kind of strawberry milkshake.
Actually, no.
It was supposed to be raspberry, which is flavored. Awful. And also it's that awful adult fraudulence where you both are being subjected to the indignity of arse worms, the physical discomfort of the worst itchy bum that you will ever have in your life.
You have to look up your bum just to confirm that you
have to look at your shape.
You're looking at your shape,
No, my dad looked up my actual arse.
Oh, really?
Yeah, my
and said, I can see them waving.
Yeah. Well, wave them goodbye.
I have literally never heard of this.
But on top of all that,
I grew up in a tiny fucking council flat in Edinburgh. We didn't have an ivory tower, and we didn't have bum worms.
You all should have been poaching by rights.
No,
everybody gets them.
Because you keep a nice clean house when you're the real deal, not a monkey, middle class bastards.
Also subjected to the indignity of adults thinking that you wouldn't notice it was disgusting because, hey kids, it's a milkshake.
Yeah,
it was disgusting.
It looked a bit like cremola foam.
It didn't look cremola.
But it just tasted like, it tasted like arse medicine, frankly.
It was horrible.
We need to get some cremola foam for one of these, actually. Mm. This should be powered by cremola foam, this.
Powered by cremola foam.
Cremola foam and Pripsin.
Pripsin, Jesus.
Right, George, make yourself useful.
Okay,
Who was that? What else was that actor in? Well, there's two of them on at the moment.
Yeah.
The one on the left.
The big tall man.
She's an actress.
With the
yeah. She's an actress.
What else was he in? He's a well-known face. Look at him.
Who's the lady?
Ellie Grant. We talked about her earlier with her face.
The actress.
She's a face. Yes.
Nice hat. Very attractive lady. She's great. She's quite scary with the red dress.
Yeah, the red jacket.
You always think she's going to open it and there'll be nothing underneath.
It's not even a dress, it's a jacket.
Look at that. Turning up on your doorstep going, check it out.
But also it's the classic imply that someone's a bit scary and whorish because they're wearing something red or go dirty.
Yeah. Works for me, actually, to be honest with you.
You never actually...
What colour are you wearing tonight, Rose, by any chance?
Quiet. That's crimson.
Ah, right, okay.
You never actually see what she wears on that because she has that red jacket on all the time.
Just like Dean Wormer's wife in Animal House. She's really angry.
You see, the thing is here is when she says, she's well, what were you talking about? And then she won't say, and she says, oh, I'm not sure yet. Just say it.
Ron Logan.
Because see, if you think that you've seen a wall and it points out that somebody rich is the son of Satan, you don't have to be sure of that. Because see, if you're wrong, the consequences of being right aren't very much different. Mm.
Well, they are, though. I mean, isn't that part of what's good about these films is that thing about, like, they tap into the fear of mental ill health and believing that you've discovered something and then subsequently discovering that you're mad or, you know, that's kind of part of the tension of these and the enjoyable play between, like, have you discovered something or are you insane and will everyone ignore you about something important that you were correct about or, you know.
Well, look how she's dressed. She looks like she's some epic beginning of the rugby team.
Ron Logan has never had Pripsin.
Good, me neither, Ron.
He likes Rennies, but I think he's probably talking about indigestion.
Oh, love Rennies.
Doesn't do much with bubblegums, does it?
No.
Gaviscon's pretty manky as well.
Gaviscon's horrible.
Yeah,
it's
chalky.
Mm. I mean, well, it really is, like...
Yeah.
It's like eating a school.
Mm. When I was a nipper and we went round to visit my great auntie, she would serve us... she would say, right, I'm going to get you some orangeade. And essentially it was just orange squash, water and Andrews. Fantastic.
I used to know somebody who drank a bottle of vodka with a tin of liver salts.
Yeah, I start the day with
they ran out of ginger, so they put water and a spoonful of liver salts into it.
I know someone who I think his family wealth comes from, I think, the Japs liver salt. His family invented them.
Yeah.
Yeah, wow. A lot of money. It's not Jap, actually.
Where's he from, then?
I start the day with a Barocca.
I like
absolutely. Yeah.
Do you get the limeade wee wee afterwards?
No.
Oh yeah, no, I do the radioactive orange pressure. Yeah.
Well, you're gonna die if you don't. I mean, where is it going?
Maybe
if
I do, but I don't pay that much attention. You
have a wee cake tomorrow.
Oh well, yeah.
Have a not sure how you could know.
Have a look and a smell, and then maybe get a friend.
You don't need to smell.
No, you don't. It's like pushing Mary, mate. I mean,
Listen, Mankey, you don't need to smell. It's a visual experience.
Usually checking my phone in the toilet. You know how
I like a smell.
We're coming up to one of the best bits in this film.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Do we have time to cut over to the information exchange or not?
Very quickly.
Okay, information exchange. The actor you're talking about is Nicholas Pryor, who was the dad in Risky Business and Gumball Rally.
Oh, there you go.
Excellent. Thank you for that.
Thank you, George.
That car's
Risky Business is another one of those films that you just watch and think, you know. My life was not like that as a teenager, so that's why
I don't think I've seen Risky Business.
I don't like
Ferris
Bueller either. I can't be bothered.
I know, I like Ferris Bueller. What's your name?
He's a wee prick.
Yeah, but it's got Ethan McCluck in it, and it's got Jeffrey P.
Yeah,
Pedo Jones.
They're great in it, but...
Yeah,
Jeffrey Pedo Jones.
Pre-Pedo.
Oh, Pre-Pedo Jones. Okay.
It's a shame about that.
Look at those
Jones,
shots.
Because he was a great actor.
Those shots of the Raven's Eye are beautiful.
Yeah. Well, Don Taylor did a really good job of this. It's well directed.
It is.
It's horrible, though. You do kind of wonder why she just doesn't grab it by the legs and scorn it off the ground.
Yeah.
Ah, look at that.
Headbutt it with it under you onto the pavement.
Surely a bag can't do that much damage. I mean, goodness sakes.
But also, I think it's one of those things you watch and you can really have that bodily sense of it, you know, that like tapping away on your head.
No, that thing with pulling at the hair.
Yeah.
Yeah, pulling at the hair's pretty hard.
You'd panic.
No.
Just fall into the ditch now. That bird's really good.
Just to clinch it, here come three crows driving a lorry. You're up, guys.
Yeah, here we go. The truck. Here comes the truck. Quite a long shot, though, isn't it?
It is. It's BG and the bear coming.
Are they going to tell her how to avoid
rolling down to Dallas?
I'm telling you, it's not. It's six crows walking together.
That was the one good joke.
The penguins
about,
in Madagascar.
That was the one good joke in Max and Paddy, wasn't it? Was the title song was
that was it.
The
rest of it.
There was one or two other things that did make me laugh, but it was just the phrase "you play with feathers, you get your arse tickled" made me laugh.
Why are we talking about fucking Peter Kay during the best bit of Omen 2?
Fuck that, there you go.
It's pretty nasty, isn't it?
Ow, my BCG!
Call back.
So, since we're now in a wintry setting, Jack, let's open another window of the Cream Guide Films Advent Calendar.
But this is another good thing about this.
Here we are. So,
it's the winter.
The discussion topic is those spidery octopus things that used to roll down windows.
Oh fuck! I remember that.
Was that?
Did you have one of those?
Is that your suggestion?
No, it's on the. It's in the.
It's
advent
in
calendar.
That.
Oh, right,
I don't
just
know what's in the advent calendar. It's in the advent calendar. The advent calendar is just there.
Can I just
so
say that?
Just open that door.
Dangerously close to the wrong kind of nostalgia.
It is dangerous. It's the same thing. It's a win, but let's talk about it. I think the problem with those ones was...
go on.
You're just giving me a wee sound effect. It's quite good, that, isn't it? I've got a couple of Maltese and then a bowl of oats.
It's so easy. You can do it at home.
I feel like they're part of that subset of things that you think exist only in the past, but occasionally you find them in gift shops, like wee rubber monstery guys like finger puppet end of pencil things.
Slinkies.
Little parachute lads.
Yeah,
that
like
you could throw
lads.
Up to about a metre in the air and they'd quite slowly fall back down.
But still, if you could throw a window one floor up, that was good.
Or the those foam aeroplanes.
Yeah.
They come in a sort of...
The foam aeroplanes had the same problem as the wee things that went down, the wee rubbery octopus things. Uh-huh. They probably lasted about 8 minutes before
they
were
always pulled the legs off.
Yeah, but there was an inbuilt problem with the octopus things, which was you would chuck them at the wall and then watch them come down and then take them off the wall and then off the floor, then lick them and then throw them back on the wall. And then it was time for Pripson.
It was Bummer's.
That's how you got. That's how you got Pripson.
Maybe because
you arrived on that plane, the Bummer.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hey, I said no.
That man's just said just because it hasn't been done doesn't make it illegal.
What? Yay.
That man just said just because it's never been done doesn't make it illegal.
Well, who knows if it's never been done? I don't imagine they've invested in any legislature. No, but also, I think those toys are all variations on a theme of things falling a bit more slowly than shit normally does.
That's quite good. I like that.
But those...
that's what I like about Slinkies.
They've never come back, though.
What, Slinkies?
No.
What?
The octopus things you throw them off. I think we're actually talking about...
Okay.
You know,
I don't think they have.
I don't think those slightly slower than gravity things give you that feeling of like, holy shit, I've kicked the tits off God and beaten physics. they just are things that have come downwards a bit more slowly than you'd expect things to under their own weight.
Wacky wall walkers.
What?
Says whom?
I don't remember those.
Is that what we're talking about? Wild West.
So can I just
get a bit... Look at me. Stop staring at him.
Yeah.
It is a bit rude.
Hey,
I'm all there, lad.
He is.
Look at what he's...
While you're down there. Wow.
So we're getting some questions from the Information Exchange regarding the podcast for... the last live commentary, so that'll be going out tomorrow.
Tomorrow, yeah.
I believe so. And then in the week, there's a Christmas special of what we just watched, and then after that, it'll be David Newman 2.
That'll go as a podcast next Monday, and next Monday night, we'll be doing the final countdown or whatever it's called.
We'll be doing Newman 3.
So. Now, I like this house.
Yeah, it's a good
house. I like this house!
Are you talking about this house?
That's a good house!
I feel very at home here.
I love that house!
Oh, I love this house.
Chris, don't make me go home tonight. I feel very at home here. No, I like the house in the film.
Is this one of your three nights on with Chris? Because I wondered why I was only allowed to see four.
It's just, all this money that you promised me.
Suspicion. Does anybody at 12 have suspicions of destiny? Mm. Suspicions of hair, perhaps?
Or suspicions
of worms.
Suspicions of your winky going a bit big sometimes for reasons you're not sure about.
What's this stuff?
I have a 12-year-old son who spends most of his time trying to do well at school, so his mad fucking granddad, my dad, will send him £20 notes in the post. There you go, son, there's another 50 quid for you. Thanks, Papa.
So, Craig, you like the house? And
oh, it's beautiful. This is their winter house, isn't it? It's just... It's a sort of, you know, it's a more laid back. Because you can wear a yellow jumper under a tweed jacket and kind of pat folk on the shoulder.
Because you see them closing up the other house before they move up there.
Mm. So look, he's...
Before they move somewhere colder the winter.
Yeah, absolutely. I believe this was...
This is a particular
one. That was that thing we talked about last week.
You see, once these hats get wet, you kind of get them dry.
We were talking about this last week, about the thing about... which film did which death occur in?
Mm. Oh, yeah. They get a wee bit mixed up. I wonder how they filmed that.
Cameras, film,
you're
action.
Smart ass. What I mean is, do you think they put them on a sled or...
A toboggan.
Do you think it was just a handheld thing?
Yeah, they'd be getting dragged along backwards on a sled or something. They might have put a track there. Mm. Gil Taylor shot the stuff with Mike Hodges. Someone else shot the rest of it. But some of this could, because Gil, Michael just shot other stuff as well. Uh-huh. It's just all sort of throughout the film.
Yes, little bits and pieces.
So we've got a story.
I imagine
you read that on
Taylor
Wikipedia,
stuff,
didn't you?
On Wikipedia about I imagine the Gil Taylor stuff's probably all the, in the museum and in the offices, all those shiny, all the shiny wood surfaces and everything.
Well, it wouldn't be much of a stretch having just done Star Wars to be going down that corridor, would it?
That's true. Now, Rose, where's this
She's quite flirty
then,
with him, isn't
the
she?
The Omen trilogy, where does that stand in the pantheon of horror films, in your view?
Oh, Jesus, that's been an easy...
I think you hold it in quite a high regard, do you not?
Oh, there's a difference between asking me how I regard it or, in general, what do I consider...
The latter.
Make a ruling.
Yeah, what do you think?
A personal adjudication.
Yes, yeah.
Uh-huh. I think they're my favourite... they're my favourite horror films.
Oh, right.
Wow. So you like them even
Shall we come
more...
back next week for the final conflict, then?
I'm afraid I'll be in London, darling.
Yeah, I'll be in London. So do you like them
remotely?
Do you like them more than The Conjuring?
Mars!
Now you've both been The Conjuring too. Valak!
It's one of the great regrets of my bloody year that you didn't come to The Conjuring 2.
But I did watch it with Chris, with the deranged Marilyn Manson nun.
It's great, isn't it?
It was fucking immense. Now,
it was enjoyable.
It doesn't look like Marilyn Manson, that's true.
Graham Kibbles White wants to know an update on snacks, please.
Oh, right, okay.
Pork pie,
crisps,
biscuits, German biscuits.
They were those curry crisps that I brought last week.
They were nice.
Yeah, they're sort of coriander and Maltesers. Something chilly, poppadomly crispies.
Yeah,
right? M&M's.
We've got Twirl
Peanut
Bites.
M&M's, Twirl Bites and Maltesers.
I have to contend. I have to contend that my friend, who's a historian, said that there's no need for them to be called Empire biscuits anymore. They are and always were German biscuits, and it was purely as a product of the Second World War that they became Empire biscuits, and they should be German biscuits once again.
Well, that's interesting, because I was told it was the Great War that they changed it in. But I grew up calling them German biscuits. My mum always called them German biscuits.
We just always
and you
them
had
them.
A worm-free arse, so should be listened to.
Oh, look, you've
done
They're
quite
the
perky, those two, aren't they, sitting there?
Oh. Oh.
We're missing the horror. Ow.
That's disgusting. Yeah, the horror's happening.
He's
been chopping out.
Stand back, everybody. The horror's happening.
Because this will help if I chop this away from me.
What I particularly like about this is that there isn't actually any resolution. It just finishes with the whole, you know, spread out everybody, and you don't see your body dragged out or anything.
Also, I think what's brilliant is that plays to all those kind of nebulous cautionary tales you're told as a teenager about, you know, someone who threw a javelin, someone who went and tittered about on some ice, someone who went swimming in a quarry, and it's, you know, no one ever quite knows the person it happens to, but it feels real, and it feels like something from warnings that were given to you that are terrifying enough.
The spirit of dark and lonely water was out there.
Did it freeze frame there at the end of that shot? It looked like it did.
I've never noticed.
It looks like a Bruegel painting.
Look at the amount of ice.
It does indeed.
See the amount of ice in the air? Yeah. This is not even snow.
No, it was proper cold then, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Very cold.
It's
just as Roy Walden's nose is heated from the inside.
Rose, The Exorcist, we were talking about this last week, and it's quite a dim view in the room.
It was a dim view of The Exorcist in the room.
Exorcist,
the fuck am I doing here? With these.
Put these two girls right.
It's a fucking awful
one. So, why is it a good film?
No, first of all, well, you haven't asked either of them where this sits in their canon of horror.
Well, right, it's Craig.
Oh, well, but Craig's a much bigger horror. I'm not.
Craig's
I'm
a proper horror fan.
Yeah, he's a proper horror fan.
So I rate this quite highly, yeah. Yeah. Mm. I think most, I mean, you know.
Higher than The Wicker Man?
Yeah. Well, what is unusual about them is that even still, by the 70s, horror was a fairly low-budget, kind of grungy genre. These are big, glossy Hollywood movies.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, and they're big shot with, you know, a fair bit of a lan.
Mm.
And so because of that, they do stand out.
He's a cat badger with a leather jacket.
Fly, wasn't it?
I am Oski.
I mean, the third one's a bit lower budget than the others. It's
a wee
bit ropier looking.
Well, it does edge into the sort of TV movie.
It does. It's very flat. Yeah, I can't remember who directed the third one. Nobody particularly.
The worst. We'll talk about the third one next week at some point.
Yeah.
But.
And you've stopped fucking saving the Waynes.
But the. Yeah, the problem, the major problem in the third one in terms of portraying the plot is the old priest goes to see the wife who's just given birth to fucking Jesus. And then the next thing, he's telling somebody, no, the wind's safe.
Yeah.
It's beyond her. It's like, really? That's all right then. So actually none of this matters anymore. Because once the baby's safe, it doesn't matter how long Sam Neill kicks around, he's going to wither on the vine.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, Chris, where do you rate this, the Omen trilogy, then?
Well, I'm not a massive horror aficionado.
Clarify that.
I'm not a proper horror fan.
Yeah.
But I think I hold it well up there, certainly above The Exorcist.
Ooh.
But not above Exorcist 3.
Oh, that's a look of shock.
That was a googly.
Which is an immense film.
Yeah, okay. Sell
me on The Exorcist 3.
Legion is a phenomenal film. Oh, Sharon. Our Sharon that was in here with us last week.
Hiya, pal.
As you said, I thought this was tomorrow. No, it's tonight. We thought it was tomorrow as well.
What can I say? Take it up with the children.
Do you know Exorcist 3, Rose?
I have seen it during the period in which I lived in America and there was nothing to do but hire videos, again, with a bigger horror section than anything else.
Where about in America did you live?
Yeah.
Just north of Boston, in a town called Amesbury.
Was it nice?
And for a while in Winthrop, home of Sylvia Plath, I preferred that because
I
had the
cat
for Sylvia Plath.
So worked it well for her as well. It was a place to grow up.
So you'll never leave.
Hiya, pals. Hiya, Sharon.
Hi, Sharon.
Oh,
I know someone called Angela who might be listening in tonight. Hiya, Angela.
Angela, she's probably not.
She's not.
No,
she's not.
Not
one of the things. Well, if she was, she's probably just fucked off.
So, Chris, let's pick up the conversation with Exorcist 3.
Exorcist 3 is an amazing film. It's properly got shocks, horror, thrills and spills, and tension, and jeopardy.
Mm-hmm.
Hang on, is it the one with the locusts?
No,
that's Pazuzu. That's the second
one.
Oh,
that's the second one.
No, the third one's the one with George C. Scott.
Oh.
And Nicol Williams. Have you not seen it?
And
Brad
Dourif.
I think we should watch it after
and
this.
And Jason.
Off here.
Yeah, it's a great
film. It's a phenomenally good film. The problem with The Exorcist is that the first half of it is a really interesting film about a priest having an existential crisis. And the second film is silly nonsense. The second half, sorry. It's just a load of silly bollocks.
Hmm.
I absolutely cannot understand that. Like, this is the anathema of someone who happily will watch Doctor Who and The Lord of the Rings, but yet will say that the second half of The Exorcist is a load of silly bollocks.
Yeah, because films have to make sense to themselves, and the tonal shift between the first and the second halves is too much. The first, so it starts off The Exorcist. I suppose we'll talk about this at some point. The Omen 2.
Are we going to do The Exorcist?
Oh no, fuck that.
We could do Exorcist 3 though. Mm. Anyway, point is,
no, if we're going to do anyone in a commentary, it has to be number 2.
Exorcist starts off, I think, quite well with the stuff in the desert. Max von Sydow, you don't know what the fuck's going on. And here there is this big giant Scandinavian priest and amongst all these wee Arab guys are cutting about and it's all creepy and there's dogs fucking about all over the place. And it's just got a nice tone to it. And then it goes to the stuff in Georgetown, and there's the priest, and then there's this camp pal, and then there's he's like he's lost his faith and all that. Now that's really interesting.
And then there's the guy saying fucking Nazis. Yeah, he's great.
Nazi
bastard. Like
I suppose you never went bowling with Goebbels either. Nazi bastard.
Yeah, he's
and
wonderful.
All that stuff's all great. The problem is when it acts when it, and the stuff that I think I said last week, the only stuff that's properly horrific in it are the medical procedures that she goes through.
Oh, that is...
Which are really horrible.
Horrible.
But see when the fucking head starts going and the spew starts going, it's just like, fuck off. This is just nonsense. This schlock nonsense.
Like what I
said.
I think you're right insofar as that that's the least good bit of an excellent film, but I don't think that it devalues the whole.
I think it is. I disagree.
I think it's overpraised.
While we're talking
it's
about...
It's certainly overpraised. Don't get me wrong. I will, just for shits and gigs, every now and again I watch it. But all this pish about it being, you know, the Kermode greatest film ever made, that's all bollocks.
No, I don't agree with that.
Can we just cut to the
but
information
I also
exchange?
Really like Mark.
Over to the action information exchange.
Yeah. While we're talking about devalued holes, we have a description...
Devalued holes?
Yeah, we have a description here of consuming Pripsin.
Yep.
Pink milkshake-like fluid for treatment of tapeworm. Taste profile: chalk and acid. Side effect: loud crying in children.
It's not tapeworm. It's threadworm.
Yeah. Threadworm. Okay.
Can we stop talking about that actually? Because I'm beginning to taste it again.
I've had no kind of parasitic worms in my life.
Very good. George White wants to know: is there going to be a TV Cream Christmas commentary?
Well, I think this is it, isn't it? Maybe not.
What are you going to do? Santa Claus the movie?
Oh, no, that really is horrific.
Die Hard, because it's a Christmas movie, so yeah. Can't say.
He's one of them. I fucking love Die Hard.
Oh, this is a Christmas movie as much as Die Hard is. Yeah. It's big
Christmas.
I went and
saw Die Hard at the cinema when you were about fucking 9, you snarky bint.
We got some breaking comments on The Exorcist. The Exorcist is shit, says George White. The Exorcist 2 is insane fun. And my granddad's cowshed was used as a model stage for effects, as the post-production was done in Ireland because of Boorman directing. Exorcist 3 is good, though. Meanwhile, Sharon, who you may remember featured on our last commentary, wanted us to know that she watched The Ginger Dead Man with Gary Busey.
Sorry.
He ate all the crisps. Ba-boom.
Hey! Are you all right?
I'm all right, yeah. I've gone a bit Rambo.
Would you rather have a baseball cap?
No, I just like wearing a bandana to my napper.
So, Craig, what's happening in this film?
So gay.
What's happening in this film is...
Fantastic!
He's just been told... Well, he's been reading the Bible.
Why is he checking if he's gone bald?
To see if... We all do, darling. Except for me, because I've got a magnificent head of hair.
Well, he's not got one...
Covered up by your bandana, so we'll never know.
He's not got one, so he must have alopecia.
Yeah, oh, there
he is.
It looked
he's
using an iPhone to check
it
for
did,
a 666.
Is it one of those photographs where they say it's an extra from
it's,
no,
it's an app.
Aye.
It's like Snapchat puts 666 on your head.
Oh, hello.
Oh, and, oh, he does not in an app.
No, he's not.
So are you willing to tell us what was happening? Yeah.
Well, he's cottoned on that Mr. Neff, the commandant, has said to him, you want to look at the Bible, mate, and look at this chapter because it's about you. So he's gone off and had a look. He's a pretty rubbish runner, watch.
He is.
Run. Good shot, though. Look at it. Picked him up there. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
does anyone do good upset running, though, or does it always look a bit flappy and melodramatic?
Nicolas Cage doesn't in the Wicker Man.
No, that's a good
question.
Covered
in beige!
Who does good upset running? The guy in the video for It's Raining Again by Supertramp.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Go and look it up. Great upset running.
They're all right.
It's raining again. Another great 80s song.
Oh, there's the Badly Running Second Doctor.
The Badly Running Second Doctor, yeah, that's right.
Is that?
The Name of the Doctor.
From The Name of the Doctor.
Yeah, when they have...
From the montage when they have the Badly Running Second Doctor.
Badly done, yeah.
I think that's a trope along with rubbish eating in films. Oh, who can do good upset running?
Does he not know that he's this...
He's just realised...
He does now that he's used the front camera
Now he's run down
iPhone.
To Duck Bay Marina to shout at the fucking tourists.
To shout at the
phone. No!
Having a head night.
No!
I thought the omen was David Rappaport and Sylvester McCoy and Jigsaw.
What was that?
That's just a day line that was...
Has anyone done the gag about the best omen being David Rappaport
and Sebastian McCoy in Dukes.
Or the Best Omen.
Oh, they, so they called the Omen, were they?
I don't know. Who gave it
to him? He was in Jigsaw. He rap a pampoor.
Okay. Who gave us that?
That was Graham.
Graham.
I didn't know that. That was an interesting
fact. Fuck's sake, Graham. How's that what we've been watching coming along with? I'm a bit worried now.
Yes, that's true. I think...
While you do that, Craig, let's open another window.
Why not?
On the Korean Guide Films Advent Calendar.
Okay.
The problem is the advent calendar is one of those really shit ones where like the picture doesn't line up with the wee window.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, and it's all slightly squint, like the virgin.
Is that a candle or a booby?
Yeah, a Virgin Mary slightly not in the nativity at all.
No.
I've opened the door and it says here, death of a TV or film character that first affected you. So that's a jolly one. So can anybody remember...
Oh, Sherlock Hemlock's back.
The death of a character on a TV programme?
Character?
Yeah, so we're not actors, we're talking characters. See, I remember characters dying in soap operas in Coronation Street.
Yeah.
And that being very upsetting. Because you used to see them every week, you see. And then you think, well, I'm literally never going to see Stan Ogden
again.
You
know, I think probably the one that I remember being shocked by was probably Adric.
Oh, okay.
No, but
I don't mean, I didn't give a fuck that Adric was dead, but it was the way it was done that a major, you know, an actual important character in a programme dies, there's no music over the credits.
He opens up a box or something, doesn't he? How does he die?
No,
that's deal or no deal.
I always remember him sort of screaming and looking at something.
No, I've never seen it since. He's trying to save a spaceship from crashing into the Earth. And he has to try and solve the problem, and he can't do it.
And he can't do it, and he says, I'll never know the answer now. Yeah. And then it plunges down the planet, fades to black, and there's no music over the credits. Yeah.
And can
that
I
was quite shocking at the time.
And the night of transmission coincides the night of the death of our guinea pig, Blackie.
I suppose there's worse things that a guinea pig could have been called.
Not much, though.
I suppose if it was Richard Todd's guinea pig, it would have been
that's
called
that's quite flat, more. Isn't it? That's on Rivershore, that's on Lakeshore Drive, that is.
So, Craig, can you think of a film or television character?
I'm trying to, but there are ones that I remember being really upset about people dying. I remember seeing Von Ryan's Express on the telly, and spoiler, being really upset at the end of that when Frank Sinatra gets killed.
Oh.
Of course, he doesn't really just turns around and goes, ring-a-ding-ding, you bozzles, and gets on the train, heads off to Chicago. That kind of upset me.
Rose, can you think of any?
I remember being absolutely devastated when Daphne died.
Those bunch of mongrels had driven off the road, isn't that right? That was really it was really well done. They really melted, didn't they?
But also, you know, they were like she and Des. They were such a comedy mismatch couple, and you were like, "Oh my god, no one is ever going to love him again. He's an idiot." she saw his beauty.
They did kick the ass out of it, right?
Do you know, I've just thought of one as well. It's the death of Jeremy in Grange Hill. Now, do you remember this?
Yeah. Oh yeah,
do you remember this?
Yeah, was that the brick in the bottom of the pool?
That's right.
Yeah, he was a prick though, wasn't he?
Jeremy?
He was a prick.
Yeah,
and then that's
he
died. What made it quite weird. Was that
I remember being quite upset when. I remember actually really crying my eyes out when Bernard Cribbins's horse died in Shillingbury Tales.
I remember that as well.
Yeah, it was really upsetting. It was Sunday night. It was a really great
Sunday
program.
Night, Shillingbury Tales.
Robin Nedwell with the wee MGB and all that.
Did anybody give a fuck when Danny Kendall died?
Yes, I would. But in a totally really? Self-interested way of, I think, having that freak out where you're like, he's only a kid and I'm only a kid and he suddenly had a brain.
Yeah.
I don't think I was sorry he died. I think it freaked me out because I was like, oh, this is quite a realistic programme and he just died. Maybe I could die, but I don't think I cared that he was dead.
I just thought it was so fucking tiresome. It really used to bother me that he behaved like a total cunt all the time.
Yeah.
And then, but they would just keep giving him stuff. You'd just write on that. We'll use that wall. Oh yeah, we'll use your design for the badge.
Yeah.
No, he's a wee prick.
My dad.
You fucking learn from that, mate.
My dad cried when Clive Gibbons left Neighbours.
Really? He didn't die. He just left, and my dad cried.
Do you think that was because your mum had just fucked?
Kind of.
Probably. I am. I don't remember who else upset me.
Oh,
I remember not liking that Quint dies at the end of Jaws. That upset me.
Uh huh. Ron Logan is on your side, Rose, with this. He was upset at Danny Kendall's death than he should have been, considering that he didn't like him shit. Very much.
Danny Kendall looked like he was 52, though, didn't he? He
was a heavy smoker, wasn't he?
I always thought he was played by the horror writer James Herbert. He bought an uncanny resemblance.
Hello, I'm John James Herbert. I wrote The Rats, you know.
Did he write The Rats on the Squeaking Wall?
Oh, I remember Mr. Bronson saying to me, you'll never make any money from these books, James, and I did.
George White suggests Compo and Last of Summer Wine.
What about him?
I don't remember Compo dying Last of Summer Wine.
No.
Well, he sort of...
hurtled down a hill in a tin pan and died of massive head injury. The law of probability dictates that sooner or later, for all those just turning out to be hilarious scrapes, sooner or later, that's going to be straight onto an A-Rose.
Oh, and
one of them would turn black, no, did you say?
Aye, the mood would have turned black.
Oh, I see. Sorry. Right.
What happened was, the series just came back and Bill Owen had died, so there was all this. There was like in fact, there was more than just one series that was just about Cosmo being the...
Hello, James! I'm dead! Compo, not Cosmo.
There was like two or three series about Compo being dead.
I just need to take off impression number one there on the list, so that's that done. What about Dickie?
He came back.
Why did Dickie have to die?
Oh, that's right. Yeah, absolutely.
All right, yeah.
Pipkins?
Yeah.
Why did Dickie... Now, there's a death in Octopussy. VJ.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Yeah, VJ Amintash.
Yeah. What do you think about that death?
I didn't get upset about that.
No, I wasn't bothered at all. You've been given lots of money. There you go, buy yourself some curry. He does. He says that.
He says, "I'll keep you in curry for a while."
I'll keep you in curry for a while.
That's really horrible.
But that's got the great thing. Myself and a great colleague of mine, no longer with us, actually. Whenever him and I walked in the newsroom, the hospital, the other one would go.
Good thing
he was an Asian guy. The other one would go and do 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 do. Because remember, that's the bit when he plays it on the wee pipe as he comes off the.
That's horrendous.
It's a great film. For me, it's horrendous. It's a fucking great film, Octopussy.
Well, Octopussy is one of the best.
It's the first Bond I saw in the cinema.
I hate all James Bond.
Do you?
Yeah.
But you like The Exorcist.
Yeah, because it's not a misogynistic load of fucking willy-waving, all James Bond films
It kind of is The Exorcist.
Yeah. Bunch of men standing around telling a 12-year-old woman to stab herself in the fanny with a cross.
I don't think they told her to do that. I think that was Satan.
Oh, look! Oh, no!
The bit isn't Satan. Satan, just men.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, no, man. Face piled.
Right.
No, I couldn't understand when Danny Kendall died and everybody started like turning their back on Mr. Bronson.
Yeah,
like, giving him a hard time. What's it going to do with him? All
he
did was give him rows for acting like a prick.
Yeah. Get on with your fucking French voles, you bunch of bastards. Get your nouns learnt.
Yeah. What's that?
I liked Mr. Bronson. He was a great guy.
I like Mr. Bronson. Mm-hmm.
Especially after getting fucking... at his age, getting kicked out of the Imperial Fleet. And then retraining as a teacher. That was fucking impressive, I tell
you. Philip Baxter would have fucking drowned him.
Yeah. Kept his foot under
the water. Yes, sir.
Drowned, sir. Yes, sir.
What about the death of Mrs. Landingham in the West Wing?
Oh, that was upsetting. That was sad.
Okay, talk us through that, Craig.
She is, spoiler, she is the president's secretary, and she worked with him when he was a governor and whatnot. So she knew him for years, and she'd lost both her boys in Vietnam and whatnot. She's a nice, really old lady. Maybe a very fine actress, actually. And then just at the end of, I think, the second series...
Yeah.
They're going to a thing, and she dies on the way there. She's bought a new car, and someone hits her and kills her. You don't see it; it happens off screen,
really?
And it leads to the great scene when Martin Sheen himself, no small Catholic, at the National Cathedral in Washington, rails against God. He does a monologue, and he calls him a feckless thug.
Does he?
And he lights a cigarette in the church, and then puts it on the ground and stands on it and walks away. Great scene.
How would that sounded if Martin Sheen's role had been played by Pat Roach?
You say Bomber's got the whip hand down. Bomber's not happy about Mrs. letting him down. Nice lady, so
Bomber don't like them Jews.
Bomber don't like them Jews.
I don't like those deaths.
No.
Bomber's got the whip hand down.
I think when we had a conversation where you were speculating about what might have been in the advent calendar that there was no way for you to know about, and if it possibly was, about which death on TV affected you. I initially said Heidi, and then I realised that wasn't a death. That was the first time that I had one of those really surprising happy cries. Uh-huh. Oh, when yeah, you're okay. small, that feels absolutely devastating.
How did he die?
No one. No one died.
It just went on forever.
That was my memory of Heidi, is that just that nothing happened.
Grandfather!
Here was one thing that I found really shocking.
In my day?
No, because nothing happened in Heidi. No, the thing that I found really shocking, but it wasn't really a death exactly of a character, but the end of The Secret of Steel City.
When they fire the gun
and the other side get frozen. And that freaked the shit out.
Remember, I asked you, did I not do that on one of these commentaries? I asked, what was the programming? And you all
Secret Scripture.
Because, that's a great one, that. This guy's a wee touch of the Barack Obama about him, isn't he?
He does, indeed, yeah.
Racist.
In Chicago as well.
So, what made you cry?
You can't say anything, can you?
I know. Well, what's about to happen to him?
What made you cry at Heidi?
Just because he's away to get his banjo.
I can't remember, but I remember having a traumatic happy cry.
Okay.
In that was the first thing I ever was so moved by.
Or something.
I am a crier at films and TV.
Oh, yeah.
I am now, but I think that was the first time I ever had that kind of happy cry, and it was so weird to be upset that it felt incredibly traumatic. Whatever's going to happen to this guy now?
Speaking of happy cries at films, I'd like to make mention. Uh-huh. Of the excellent short film, the action short film, Curmudgeons.
Oh, brilliant!
I showed him. So now I'm not going to tell you anything about it.
Yeah, it's great.
Except that
it's about Chris and Craig.
I just realised there's an old boy who lives in a home and blah blah blah.
Yeah.
But it's much more. It's much better than you think.
It's great.
Now, the old boy is played by Lenny the Mayor from Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
Which I just worked out. I just realised struck me last night. It was a fantastic.
Oh. Yeah, it's great.
How did you track it down? Is it just? It's on Vimeo.
It's on Vimeo.
Yeah,
really good. Curmudgeons on
Vimeo. Oh, here we go.
Shit just got real.
Apparently, this can't actually happen with lift lifts.
What can't happen? They can't fall.
They can't fall like
that. Are they like one of those spider things that go down the glass?
That's a bit animated, that backdrop, isn't it? It looks like he's flying through the Marvel titles.
You don't think if it was falling like that, he'd probably be bouncing about a wee bit more as well?
Watch.
So why can't they fall?
Because
the way they're designed with counterbalances and brakes means they can't fall like that.
Wow.
It's a myth. Maybe not back then. Man.
Is that the Mandela effect?
Watch!
Here it comes.
Fine. I've survived them all right.
I'm fine.
How am I going to get out of here?
Yep.
Fuck you, you're not.
Bastard! Oofed. Now.
That is quite a good one.
But do you think they get the feeling that after the first film they had to have somebody having some slice?
Need
a wee slice of something there.
And it's almost certainly at the same point in the film.
It's really well done.
Yeah, it's great. Look at that house. Look at that.
Now, when they made Omen 2...
If I were a reclusive horror victor, I'd live there.
Yeah, absolutely.
When they made Omen 2, were they planning on making Omen 3?
I have no idea.
No idea, Joe.
Wait, if there was only a proper horror fan, we could ask of him.
Yeah, but I wasn't involved in the sort of planning of the studio. Look at that lovely cardigan he's wearing.
That is a nice cardigan, isn't it?
Your dad would like that cardigan, Chris.
Well, do we know? This film presumably did quite well at the box office.
Yeah, not as well as the first one. The first one did like crazy money.
Yeah.
Like 200 times its budget or something. Wow. This one was about twice the cost and made only about 10 or 12 times its budget, but it did very well, you know?
But the first one
was a crazy hit, like 200 million sort of thing.
And have you seen the remake? Anyone here seen the remake?
No.
The remake of The Omen?
Yeah.
No. Why would you bother? Who's in it?
I can't even remember. Nothing about it.
I don't really remember anything about it. Nothing about it has remained
with me other than a general sense of futility.
Yeah.
Both in its making and why I had found myself intrigued enough to watch it when I knew it would be every bit the waste of time.
Is it one of those Gus Van Sant ones?
No.
He did the Psycho beat for beat remake.
Yeah, no, it's not like that. It's just that.
I thought it was like that. It's just a shite, average remake.
Because there's
something quite admirable about remaking Psycho, just beat for beat exactly the same. It's almost like a piece of performance art.
Yeah.
Has anyone seen, apart from me, the very terrible Omen? Is it the Omen 4 with the little girl?
I've got a video over there.
What?
Are you doing a commentary?
Hang on, there's an Omen 4.
I need to get my video plugged in.
Oh, is it on a VHS?
It's on a VHS alongside. Total Recall on My Beautiful Laundrette.
Has anybody bothered to reissue it on DVD?
I don't think so.
I'm not surprised.
So what do we know about The Omen 4?
It's a TV movie, isn't it?
The Omen... Well, it certainly looks like one.
I think it is, generally.
It's fucking terrible is what it is.
Who's in it?
Nobody of any note except...
So they're even less famous than... So I always think, you know Sam Neill, who's in Omen
fucking
3?
Bad
I don't know myself!
Bad Bart Williams is here.
What do you want, Senior Bob?
Sam Neill is a bit like Charles Dance, in that he's the low... You know, there's a Mitch and Webb sketch where they're trying to devise a game show and they talk about the lowest high cash amount being £100,000. I always think Sam Neill and Charles Dance are the lowest, highest Hollywood stars that you
what?
Can get.
No,
mean?
No, actually, but it's like the best stars without being A-list.
Yeah. Okay, okay.
I can get that.
They're kind of character actors, really, though, aren't they?
But they're the best character actors.
But when you're before you a cameo, into when you want a cameo of someone famous...
Especially if they're to be a bit evil.
Dance.
Well, the way they put that is they're the highest up you can get below the line.
Yeah.
I would say so.
Charles Dance makes me feel a bit funny.
Does he? Good funny or bad funny?
Yeah, good.
Like a 12-year-old boy at military academy funny.
Yeah, there's something about him.
Or a 41-year-old man in Sandy Hills.
Yeah, I can see that. I could definitely get that with Charles Dance.
Do you not think his office, his workspace would be bigger than that?
I think his workspace would be my perfect office. I would be really happy in a workspace like that.
I think it would be bigger.
Apart from that, being surrounded by utter noisy cunts all the time in the hospital, I'd really love to be in there. Mm. Me and the Vazzies.
Do you feel your workplace lacks urns?
It does. It also lacks those fucking brilliant magnifying glasses with lights around them. I want one of them. You know the ones that you move over and go click. That'd be great, wouldn't it?
Let's open another window on the advent calendar. Yeah.
Look at that's a great office.
That is a great office.
I think it's too small.
Okay. I also like a metal.
Oh, he's got the stabby
dragon. Okay, here we go. We're going to open another window on the advent calendar. Are we ready?
Yeah.
Go.
And it is, Robert Hardy.
Ah! That's all you need to do, that.
Ruined the judges' lodgings in Bristol.
When I
watched, actually, yeah, well, I have to come to that. But go on.
When I worked in a very small hospital in the Borders,
yes.
He lived in the Borders through a period.
Now I hate to.
He
do
was
this.
Living in a big house. That you know the way that posh people rent big houses off people. He'd rented this enormous house on a very reasonable rent for 10 years.
But
exactly,
was probably still living in one wing, huddled over like a 3
absolutely.
By fire.
And probably
from
still
the
has
60s.
A fourth fucking floor house
and
in Hampstead or something.
Yeah.
Because no, there's everything you need then. Yeah. He must be in his 90s or something now.
I hesitate to ask this question, but is he still alive?
Yes, he is.
For now.
I'm not sure we should be.
Well, I know this is true. You know this is because.
We keep doing
absolutely.
Last week it was...
is he still alive for up to 24 hours?
Peter Vaughan last week.
But they don't know if you didn't listen to the live, because the fucking recorded one doesn't come out till tomorrow, but it actually was before he died.
And then early in the year when we had Marky Mark Miller with us, we were talking about Paul Daniels.
And
then he pegged it.
Yeah,
can we ask if Bruce Forsyth is still
alive?
Well,
I was going to say, because I don't really want Robert Hardy to be dead because of us, but I couldn't give a fuck if Bruce Forsyth died.
Look at that, they're having a wee film night there.
Yeah, it's a shit film though.
Yeah, it's like sort of fucking Lassie the Horse or something.
Yeah.
So, Robert Hardy.
Oh, look at that, Chris, we'd be happy living there.
Lassie the Horse.
So, Rose, you had a Robert Hardy memory I think you wanted to mention, did you not?
Well, just of being in a mediocre. Tourist not even a tourist attraction, a kind of non-national trust, small, historical, not particularly interesting museum, the judges' lodgings in Pristina, one of those places where they push the audio commentary on you, and it was Robert Hardy fucking shut up the whole way around the judges' lodging.
I once went to the...
what was this place, the judges' lodgings in Pristina?
In Pristine.
Oh, sorry, right.
Not Pristina.
Where's
not in like the Balkans.
Where's Pristine?
Only, is it Wales, England? In border town, Shropshire.
Reaver country.
Yeah.
And it was one of those audio commentaries where, like, he would clearly hadn't been working for a while and he had put everything into this. And he was chewing the scenery.
Don't mock the man for his professionalism, Ross.
It was clearly each room was, you could have stayed in there with Robert hardly shut up. For half an hour, he was like, I am the judge and I have just woken up and I'm going to have kippers and slippers and then I'm going to have a poo and a wee and then I might go back to bed for a bit.
and crack one off.
Relentless.
I once went to the very interesting but small cabinet war rooms.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd like to go there.
They are very small. It doesn't take long to get round, but it's very interesting. But I was just sort of killing time before I had to get a train or something. And it was like one of those horrible roasting days in London, as opposed to one of the horrible damp days. They're all horrible, but this one was a horrible roasting day. So it was quite cool. And I went down, and again, they tried to push the, you know, pay an extra or whatever. It was already about 25 quid to get
in. Yeah, it's not cheap.
And it's like, there's another you know, tenner for the audio commentary. And I didn't take it. And then as I walked down the stairs, I thought, I know quite a lot about this shit, just because, you know, I'm a bit of a dick. But there's probably stuff that I don't know. But there was one person who'd bought it, and literally it was like having Robert Hardy sit on your shoulder like fucking Yoda, shouting in your ear. Because the other guy was away down the end with the audio thing.
And you could
hear
it.
And he was Churchill, and he went in here! Ah, oh, and he went in, this is where he had a shite! Like, all right.
Oh, but Churchill a lot, didn't Hanks he, Robert Bob. Hardy?
Was he playing Churchill in it, or was he described? Because in the judge's logic,
oh no, he was doing everything.
Oh, pretending
he did the speeches. He degraded Attlee. He did everything.
He degraded Attlee.
Yeah, that was a satirical joke.
Yeah, okay, I like that.
Do people still wear pyjamas like that?
Formal pajamas.
Yeah. That's get piping as well.
Oh, I've never worn a formal pajama for a long time.
They're more of a t-shirt.
Yeah. Kind of joggy shorts.
Somebody will have leaked.
Apparently, you get a threadworm if you wear formal pajamas.
That's why they have little pockets, because there's a sachet of arse medicine in it.
I feel like they're pajamas to die in. I think if you went terminal, you'd find yourself in a set of those pyjamas. There is sort of Peter Bowles only when I laugh. I mean, not that he died in that, did he? Did he die? Was anyone upset by it?
I don't think anybody died in the when I laugh.
No.
They were just there all the time. Mm. God, remember when you could actually make a comedy about a hospital where people were there for a long time?
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, and they were all just in there with trapped farts or a sore thing.
What's wrong with them?
Well, James Bolan was a malingerer.
And the rest of it was, did Christopher Strelley not have a hernia or something?
Or anxiety or something,
They were all really trivial things, just so that Richard Wilson could come and poke them, and a racist porter could come back and go, "Yeah, you want some tea or comic thunder?"
Happy days.
Yeah, those were the days.
That's quite a sinister thing, isn't it? Very ontological.
It's funny, though, because the thing that you remember of Only When I Laugh is the theme tune. Yeah. And you remember who was in it, but you don't really remember very much of what happened. No, you forget it was like Eric Chappell and it was proper, like, slip over and fall on your ass.
I do remember there was a very funny one, which involved a greyhound called Throbbing Gristle, which made me laugh. Look at that, that's a great place to live,
isn't it?
It's
like a compound. Yeah. It's like lots of wee houses. See, one's the wank house?
I'd be the big... horror writer, and you don't have houses in my grounds.
Hmm.
So come together and do these for fun.
He is sort of a bit of a Kylo Ren prototype of just an incredibly powerful Dark Lord going round having the half and throwing the titty lip all over the place.
Yeah, no, totally.
So, Craig, in the brief moment we've been distracted from actually talking about the film, what's happened?
Damien has embraced his devilry.
Okay.
The man with the nice office from the museum is now on board, thinking
crackers.
He's been trying to convince William Holden. He's beautifully dressed in this film,
but he's gone, like Rose said earlier, he's gone the full "Am I nuts?"
Yeah, he has. Yeah, absolutely. But William Holden's now starting to get a bit kind of, I don't know, maybe there's something in this wee creepy wee bastard.
Well, because the guy from the museum has come and told him all the stuff, you know, and he must know.
Well, there's a lot of folk have died.
Yeah, but what I mean is, from the first film, so somebody will have told William Holden, look, this is actually what happened.
Mm.
And wasn't William Holden?
No, he's cracked onto it. He overheard the bad acting cousin. Awesome. And this scene, he is really genuinely unspeakable in this.
Yeah.
Doesn't cut together brilliantly, that, does it? Because they're going the same direction.
Yeah, they're just catching up with each other.
I think he could play like he could have played like a young Terry Wogan, actually.
That's
all.
He's got the ears
when you look at him.
You should have seen this devil when you look at the stage.
That would give you piles sitting on that.
now.
No, come on, get a, come get on, a cold Mark. In his kidneys.
Yeah.
Come on, Mark, now. You need to.
Yeah, that was a great one when we were kids, wasn't it? You need to get cold in your kidneys.
Come along with me now.
Yeah. Women who had their tops up, they get cold kidneys.
Join me in
and piles. Yeah. Piles and cold kidneys.
And you're going to be part of my demonic army.
of this parish.
Timmy's old demonic army. That's others.
And then if you're not, you know, you'll be Banja.
And William Holden was offered a part in the first one, wasn't he?
And he was, he turned it down. And then saw how much money had been spent. Yeah. Get me into the second one!
Get me into the
show! Get off me, Stephanie, I'm going to get into the second one. Keep those lions just in a cage, it's fine. he had a game preserve in Africa. Not for shooting them, for preserving them. He was him and Stephanie Powers kind of wanted to save the rhesus monkey.
Yeah, and when they got together, it was murder!
He was a pretty sad character in the sense that he was a terribly heavy drinker. He was a great actor. He's a much better actor than Gregory Peck in the first one.
Oh, fuck.
Look at that lad there.
That lad's a better actor than Gregory Peck.
I'd be looking at the tree going, which one said that? I'm not entirely sure.
Nice coat. Nice jacket.
There's some great... there was a
great jacket acting going on.
When they were outside, you were talking about how cold it was.
Jacketing, yeah.
There's... some great jackets in it. Some great sheepskin coats.
I love sheepskin. Yeah, lots of ski jackets.
Yeah.
People don't wear ski jackets anymore.
No, they don't, really, do they?
No, I had a ski jacket when I was a teenager. Yep. It was great, yeah.
There's a dearth of sheepskin in general.
Look at him run. No.
Yeah, but
no, that's some bad upset,
really
right?
Bad upset.
Yeah, see, that's how poor an actor he is. That was some pretty limp upset running.
Yeah, why is he holding on to that tree?
I don't know, but it looks
is
like...
Is it the tree's whispering his lines to him?
It's written up on a piece of paper.
Like, no, the tree's like, you only just narrowly beat me to this gig.
It's a lovely silver birch that he was holding on to.
It's the larch.
The desolate one.
See, no,
why is he desolate?
Yeah, I know. He's
the tree, the cousin.
I bet he has.
The chirpy one.
He's risen Mark and me. Well, you should tell someone about that.
That his NRX reminiscent of my mum bought me from What Everyone Wants.
Oh,
yeah. Our girls, yeah, I'm from whatever is. I really wanted it. It was like at that like kind of early adolescence where you suddenly decide you better make some effort to be cool. Shouldn't have wasted my fucking time. Didn't waste my time for long. Really wanted a denim jacket. Oh, a proper, yeah. Like...
I never wanted a denim
jacket. I really wanted a denim jacket. I think as a kind of sop to, like, oh, what do cool people wear? It's the
1980s. What does Craig McLaughlin wear?
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. I want to look like I am the two-in-check one, too.
Yeah.
And my mum came back from whatever he's with a denim anorak with a sort of Transformers print fabric in the hoop.
Yeah.
But it wasn't even real Transformers. They were called, like, Changeabots.
Transgressors.
That's actually really.
And a sheepskin trim. And it was like, well, I'm never wearing. I mean, I would wear it now. It was cool as
fuck. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But the devastating.
I'm really quite ill feeling that.
Yeah, it's a really gippy story.
You could go into any fucking Glad cafe and get a soy latte off the back of that jacket.
Oh, indeed. Oh, look. It's got Transformers in the hood.
Suppose Bob Holden's one, look. He's had his hair cut around his ears like that.
He has, yeah. Like Terry Wogan.
Yeah.
Slash Zoe Ball. She's got...
very strategic.
Did Terry Wogan have...
He got very big flat.
Did he have a wig or not?
No.
No, I had a massive comb over, didn't he?
I didn't. Oh, Craig, I didn't have a wig. I just had a massive comb over. And now here, Mark's dead. And that's him down. Anyway, let's go on now and talk about... the records.
Well, actually, talk about the records.
Here's the Scissor Sisters.
Damien's
the gays.
Damien's got the sort of look of like he's in a sort of minor Britpop band, like the Blue Tones or something.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Shed Seven.
Where have you gone? The Cemetery.
Yeah.
No, not Shed Seven.
That's a
Shed
video.
Seven weren't a minor band. Shed Seven were one of the greatest bands in history.
And is there
Going for Gold is immense. And any song that begins, "She left me on Friday and ruined my weekend," has to take.
Wasn't Shed Seven weird?
I don't know anything about them except the songs are.
Wasn't it
great.
One of? Wasn't it, what's his name?
Their lead
from?
Singer's rhyming songs, aren't they?
Isn't it from Fahrenheit?
Really?
I thought Shed Seven was the guy that was in Stone Roses.
No, that was Seahorses.
Oh, that was the Seahorses. The Shy Horses.
Actually,
Shed Seven were fucking immense.
Damien looks like he was in Marion. Or menswear. Yeah.
I think he was the drummer in Elastica.
Oh, the only man in Elastica.
The only man in Elastica. Intriguing.
The only man in Justine Frischmann.
Why is she pumping that bag in
edges? Justine Frischmann. I actually quite like Justine Frischmann because she's in that documentary about Britpop. Uh-huh. And there's a bit in it when, you know, Damien's saying that was a bearable time at the time. I was behaving really badly. And she was saying something like, Damon goes around the world now telling everyone loudly how awful he was so that folk will say, no, you weren't Damon. Yeah, he was. Good for her.
Torn!
Oh, I think...
Torn!
You think what?
It's all gone a bit Norman Collier on the sound, apparently. So there's not a lot we can do about that.
It doesn't really matter, to be honest. Yeah. Believe me, the numbers now.
Who's Norman Collier?
So, why is...
Hey, what's going on here then, eh?
You're just told...
Couple of wankers.
You're just told that the guy... who runs the museum is like besties with William Holden. Is there any particular reason why he would be?
Here we go.
I think that's an odd relationship.
I thought he was kind of closer to her because it's that American thing of them putting a lot of money into the museum and that's how, you know, they don't actually publicly fund things like that in America.
But there's all this stuff about him being their pals and the best pals and that's why he's over at the party and...
Well, they're supposed to be in New York.
All this
now.
Stuff is great. All this stuff is fantastic.
Except it's supposed to be in New York, but you can actually see proper Chicago landmarks in the background. Well, you see the Willis Tower or the Sears Tower, as it was for many years.
But all this stuff,
which I've been,
all this stuff in the railway yards and all the sort of the down at heel areas and all that is just brilliant.
There's a few wee crumbs left here. Should we have some of these?
Let's open another window in the Cream Guide Films.
That's a nice church calendar.
Okay. Okay, let's just see if we can make it do this as well.
Who would play?
Right, hang on.
Hudson and
Halls.
I thought
we'd talk about the film.
Hudson and Halls. What was that? I think I'll let it get.
Hudson and Halls.
Hudson and Halls.
Hudson and Halls.
What about them?
Discuss.
No, Hudson and Halls, were they not?
They were camp New Zealand cooks, weren't they?
Yeah. That's
3 o'clock? About 3 o'clock?
Well, they were part of the sort of the revolution of daytime TV.
The revolution of daytime telly. And I think the only thing that was, apart from the fact that they were really calm in the afternoon, the only was that they did that thing where they would have a celebrity would appear in the second half of it to help them cook it and then eat it. And it was always somebody...
just slightly hovering about promoting an autobiography.
Whoever happened to be around.
Oh, we cut that onion for me. So what's your book called?
So who would they have on?
But what they always had, because it was, what, late 80s, early 90s?
If it was new daytime.
Square plates.
86, 87 onwards. Yeah.
Square
Never plates. Been a fan of a square plate.
No,
that's not right.
Let alone your eternal bow hexagonal thing. Get them out my fucking grill.
That's fucking nothing compared to the shite about, you know, fucking... Here it is on a skillet, or have it on a fucking cricket bat,
or have it on a roof slate.
Just fuck off. Just put it on a plate.
Or a tiny shopping trolley of chips.
So did Hudson and Halls?
The worst thing about that is trying to get the pound coin into the wee bit.
Did Hudson and Halls ever make it out of daytime telly? Then
I don't think so.
They were killed by Damien. See, that's Chicago.
They did make it out of it.
Look at that, that's a great name. It's the Rock Island Line.
It's a mighty fine road.
Absolutely. That's Glasgow's finest.
Yeah,
so
That was the advent calendar at
Hudson and Hall.
That's what you get in an advent calendar.
But they had, they would do that thing. They used to make sort of, there were none of them from New Zealand, but one of them sounded like sort of estuary English.
I don't remember them after.
The one with the glasses was very New Zealand-y.
I seem to remember rather fun transition wipes on Hudson Halls.
What, like things turning
into a
Quantel effect unit, well, so it turns into a wine glass and pours out the next.
It turned into a little trolley of chips and then drove across the street.
And then all the chips flew out and made the next picture.
Yeah, absolutely. And then it was Pauline Collins eating some fucking...
Talking about... What was that thing called? Forever Green or something? What was that thing she was in with John Alderson?
You're missing some... Forever Green. You're missing some good mad acting from that other fella.
He didn't do any mad running, though, did he?
You know what I never liked about...
Running?
No,
but he does some great hysterical stuck to something acting.
I don't like about Forever Green. The one drawback also of Inspector Morse, it was always filmed in summer. And he's kicking about in a sort of big Harris tweed jacket in the game. He must have been sweating like a bastard. Also, Oxford looks good in the winter.
We've got a couple of episodes of Inspector Morse that were set in the winter. My favourite episode, which is the one with...
That's a bit ropey, isn't it?
It's a speaking wall. It's Danny Kendall's speaking wall again.
Actually.
The one with Ian McDiarmid that John Junkin guests in, where it's all about the magic flute and it's a sort of guy killing him. That was set in, because it was very early nights and things like that. It wasn't like snowy or anything. No, it wasn't
like
summer.
I'd like that. Speaking of which, now, as you know, I have a great weakness, Chris, and you always call me a dick for it. The last 2-3 years, I've really enjoyed the... Oh, there you go, look.
Oh! Okay, that's it.
Yeah, looking death.
No.
There's been permanent going on here.
See, that's very good, that.
Yeah. That's nicely done, isn't it?
Fucking hell.
I banned it.
I'm a BCG.
I'm a BCG.
But yes, what you are about to say can fuck off.
Yeah.
Aye, I know okay. This as well. So the last few years, but actually, it's come back to bite me. So I'm telling you straight
good,
now.
That's good.
I've always enjoyed the Christmas edition of Call the Midwife.
Okay,
right? Because it's a proper Christmassy edition.
And you know what? I really hope you're going to say that this Christmas is set abroad.
It is. Boom.
So what did it do?
I was actually looking at the Radio Times last night and I said, oh, there you go. Call the Midwife. Fucking brilliant.
About to suck
snow,
up.
The whole bit. The red pen's going at it. Fucking South Africa.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought you were going to say they went and visited the ruins of Dresden or something.
That would have been better.
Like
that would have been alright.
It's in fucking South Africa.
Also, would it not be like 50 South Africa?
Apparently,
well?
It mentions apartheid.
Wow.
Nobody mentioned it at the time.
No, they just say, oh, that's good, the blacks are kept in their place.
And so you in the legendary Christmas issue.
You can just get
I tell you what, though.
You can just get back in line with everybody else.
Not a good magazine?
No, it's not the magazine. The magazine's perfectly great. It's the fucking schedule.
Yeah, the stuff on is shit.
Jesus Christ.
Christmas schedule back this year?
Oh, it's
Christmas schedule doesn't exist anymore.
No, it's terrible.
What's the big Christmas film this year?
Well, I've no idea.
Well, there's never one now. They just don't even bother with that now. No.
Because now you're supposed to pick and choose from the smorgasbord that is digital dead.
Yeah.
Instead of anybody giving any thought to it.
So now you sort of look for really good specials from the channels, and there's just fuck all on.
Yeah.
Nothing good?
I see Rowan Atkinson's playing Maigret. Is this a new thing?
Yeah.
Yes.
Is he any good in it?
No.
Mm-hmm. I can't imagine he is.
Yeah. I think it's been on yet.
Is it not?
Wibble.
There's a two-part...
Louisville.
There's a two-part...
Holly Hot.
There's a two-part... what's it called? one of the Agatha Christie's. I think they realised last year they were onto a winner with the 10 little, you know what?
Yeah. 10 little.
So they've got another one this year, which has got Toby Jones in it or someone.
Does Maigret look good with
five
it?
Asians?
Yeah, it does.
Someone can patch on his head.
Hello.
The suspect is.
Bob.
Actually, you know,
bonjour.
Who did it, Maigret? It was
Rob Bob.
It was Mr. Bob Wibble.
I'm Robin Robin to the London Minstrel.
Monsieur Bob.
There is actually a very good joke, believe it or not, in one of the Bean films, the Mr. Bean films.
Really?
Yeah, there's the one where he's in an art gallery in America, and he manages to sort of smear the face off Whistler's mother, and he draws it on with a pen, and it's really funny.
Do you remember, though, here's a Christmassy New Year.
This is creepy, look.
Sorry, I don't want to miss the best bit of, we missed it.
What was the best
bit? The excellent fucking white kid. There they are, look, the white fucking young dancers, just that.
This is again a Sonic
Martin's laughing.
Great suit.
Fucking great.
You need to describe your dance. What were you?
It was more of a sort of.
It's trying to push the fridge up the stairs. Like, slap the beat.
Frogging.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. A bit of the rich man's frog.
So he's now telling her.
The gate, she's tumbled.
That everyone's been killed by him.
Why is she dressed as Ewan McGregor or Obi-Wan Kenobi?
Look at all those sluts.
Why wouldn't you want to?
Look at those sluts.
They just said they're going up fucking Hanging Rock any minute.
Oh, no,
aren't they?
They really do look like they're about to have a transcendent, worrying, hallucinatory experience.
No, that's you know, I wanted to see that film for years. because my brother told me, he said, is this film?
How did you know that says
went missing? So I thought it was going to be like a really spooky mystery. Fuck me, it's slow, isn't it?
Oh, it's one of my favourite
films.
It's
very beautiful. There's a lot in it that's great. Yeah. But it's not what I thought it was going to be.
No, it's not a thriller minute. And also, it's one where apocryphally lots of people believe it's based on a true story.
Ah, that's right. Yeah,
which is
I thought it was based on a true story.
Yeah.
Idiot.
Have you just realised it's not?
Well, I have now.
No, no, don't get me wrong. I honestly think it's a great film, but it wasn't what I wanted. Well, it's like 2001. Yeah. Right, brilliant. It's going to be like fucking Star Wars.
Is that not based on a true story?
You sit and watch it and go... What's going to happen?
Wow. What's going to happen? Eventually that monkey's going to finish his dinner.
I think it's one of those films that gets described as hallucinatory, which also means a bit slow, but bonny. Yeah. Slow, weird, bonny, good, but you will wonder when something's going to happen.
All of these shots of like the front of the museum and the big halls and all this sort of thing are lovely.
Yeah.
You do get the
feeling. I wonder if that's
that.
The...
I like museums.
I wonder if that's the Chicago Institute of Art.
I like museums.
I don't know if it is or not, but if it is, I've been in that. I was in that in the summer, and it's the most amazing museum I've ever been into in my life.
Oh, it's probably Glasgow City Chambers.
What's so amazing about it?
It's got a great collection, an incredible collection.
Uh-huh. That's some
lots
of it
really
there,
famous stuff.
Uh-huh. Anything
you know that? Is it Sarah, the one George, Sunday in the Park with George thing with the pointillism? That's there.
Oh,
it's right, fucking huge as well, which I hadn't expected.
Yeah.
Which is in Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
It is, yeah, because that's set in Chicago. It's also got Nighthawks there with Hopper painting.
Nighthawks in the diner.
American Gothic.
Does it have a nice tea room?
It does have a lovely having lunch there. Yeah,
that's fine.
Yeah. Was there a Winkies?
Oh, look! That's the big fucking reveal. There, your daggers, right up your ass. Where's your fucking worms new?
There they are.
I've always belonged to them. That's actually quite a good bit, that.
Yeah, that's an excellent part.
But this is the bit where you get...
No, look what he does.
That doesn't do you any good.
No.
He's the fucking son of the devil. What do you think he's going to do to you?
But there's no loyalty.
That's why she had to get her face rebuilt, because he burnt it off her.
There's no loyalty.
Damien? What? Oh, no.
You do wonder, actually, why all these acolytes, apostates of hell, as they're described in the first film, it's like, do they never like meet for pints or go for coffee or anything and say...
What, do you love Satan? I love Satan. Do you love Satan?
No, but eventually realise, do you remember Margaret? That was like the apostate before me. She caught fire. And you remember Alec? That was the apostate before you's brother. He just exploded one day in the street. I'm not sure we're in the right line of work.
Yeah, you know it now, kidders.
There's a definite downside to this apostasy. That's a nice shot.
Yeah, it's a lovely shot.
It's a great place.
It also suggests that he's about to get beasted by that chauffeur.
Aye.
That does.
Now, this is the only point in the film where the music begins.
Yeah.
Something.
Oh, is it? Oh, so it is.
In Latin.
I thought it was the...
Something else.
Is it?
In Latin.
No,
he wrote an entirely... Yes, I did read on Wikipedia. He wrote an entirely new score for it.
Yeah.
In Latin. Yeah.
I thought it was the...
So we're coming to the end then.
Well, that sounds like the soundtrack of Line and Integer.
Lynn Stalmaster. That's a name you see a lot.
Okay. Ah, it's like Sarah Crowe.
Call the midwife's gone to South Africa for tax breaks, George Wright thinks.
Yeah, you're which probably right, George.
Why is he going to South Africa for tax breaks if it's made for the BBC? Not that I know anything about that in the hospital.
Yeah, you're probably right.
Bit of politics in the dying moment.
Mike Hodges apparently wanted Damien to have a girlfriend, and this was vetoed. What do you think of that?
Well, that's probably a good idea. Yeah. In fact, he doesn't have to because they're all hanging out him.
IRA Anderson.
Oh,
yeah. Did he sing the song from Neighbours?
There's your special effects there. They're fine.
Yeah, do you think the A stands for angry?
Have you got a fucking problem with my special effects? No, honestly. They are fine.
There you go. Israel Sickens, photographed by Gil Taylor.
Just the way I am.
Did you notice me? That was Gil
Taylor?
Yeah. Oh, sorry.
Anyway, yes,
so I have. Introduced by Charles Taylor, who also invented Converse shoes.
Tell me about Bernie.
The technical advisor's Dr. McBurney.
I love Miss Grant's clothing. Bye.
They were great.
Botany 500, hopefully.
Northwestern Military and
Sergeant
Naval
Cornelius
Academy.
Sergeant Morgan, Chicago Police Department. What?
Oh. Morgan
so fucking
PD.
Fucking special about him.
Morgan PD.
So there they all are.
Yeah.
It's a good film, that.
Yeah.
We didn't we get don't, to talk
actually,
about
actually, that's
before,
you see Pissarian, the guy with the moustache, the very yeah. Jewish-looking guy. Alan Arbus.
Sherlock Hemlock.
He was, yeah, he was Diane Arbus's first husband.
You're joking.
No, he was a photographer really? Before he was an actor.
That's an amazing fact.
Yeah, I should have said that earlier on. Would you have loved that?
And then
yeah,
we could have talked about Diane Arbus at the expense of the film yeah, instead of more trivial
their
things.
Their marriage split yeah, up and then, of course, she killed herself a few years later.
Mm. See, there you go. It's been bookended by a bit of intelligence. We started with Cervantes. We're ending with Diane Arbus.
Yeah, impressive.
Just all idiocy in the middle. Yeah.
There's nothing intelligent about Cervantes.
It's how would a, you know? No just, one's read it.
Nobody's read it because it's just about donkeys and old windmills.
That's a, that sounds good. That sounds like a TV program.
Yeah, but it's not.
Donkeys and old windmills with Rick Stein.
If it was,
oh, hello.
If it was a cartoon, I'd pay attention.
Donkeys. I can't wait to see some donkeys old. And windmills. Right.
So there we go. So we arrived at the end of the film.
We have. Don't sound so unhappy about it.
It was good. I enjoyed it. It was a fun film.
I hope there's 7 on average people.
That was a big high.
Joined
at the
us.
End, by the way. Did you notice that?
That joined us for this.
Yeah, it was lots of fun.
Charade.
Yeah.
Enjoyed it.
It's hollow charade.
Yeah.
This hallucinatory.
Only one more live to go.
When are we doing the next one? UNICEF permitting?
A week tomorrow.
A week tomorrow.
A week tomorrow.
Okay. So that's the special Christmas one. Don't look at me like that. I can't help it.
Are you planning something Christmassy around that one?
Well, possibly. Not particularly.
Possibly. Interesting.
Who knows?
Interesting.
We will see. Chris, would you like to say thank you to our special guest?
Thanks, pal.
You're welcome.
Thank you for coming along.
Yeah, it was nice seeing you, Doz.
Nice seeing you. Let's
and,
never do this again.
I was going to say nice to see you nice, yeah. But that's just in the hope that Bruce Forsyth dies instead of Robert Hardy.
Yeah.
Fingers crossed.
If he does, we're going to have to play the Omen music.
Yeah.
And on that happy note, bye-bye.
Bye.